following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 211, recorded on Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Coming up in this episode, was Travis Walton rescued by aliens? Did they put a UFO in the latest Walking Dead episode? And there's a new board game based on John Carpenter's The Thing. Plus, the sightings and our picks and warnings. Before all that, though, our question of the week...
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave!
What's the question?
If you did see a UFO and you did record it, would you use anything to help steady your camera?
Oh, this goes...
Or would you just do, like, the shaky hand thing because, you know, you're like, oh my god, UFO!
This goes back to a story that we had a long, long time ago where you brought an article with tips on how to properly document a UFO sighting, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we did a list of tips to help people that happen to witness a unidentified flying object how to get the best possible shot. Because if you do a search on the YouTubes, you're going to find tons of shaky footage. And one of the suggestions was to use your vehicle if you had one nearby as a way to help steady your camera or your camera phone.
Do you guys think that you would be of sound mind to actually think of these things? Do you think you would stay calm enough to rationally figure out that what's the proper way of holding the camera and making sure that it didn't get all shaky?
Yes.
I believe so.
Even if it was like lights are shining down, there's noise. So utter chaos is going on. Do you think that you'd be able to have the sense enough to just think to yourself, okay, this is my one and only shot possibly to get a picture of a UFO. What's the best method of going about this?
Yes, I would be able to think about the best method available to me at that time to record the UFO. And I say this because years back, there was snow in Texas. I know, hard to believe. And I was driving from North Texas down to Southwest Texas. And I hit a slick patch, not going very fast, but I ended up into the oncoming traffic with a big 19 or like a 18-wheeler coming over the hill. He was still a ways off, but, you know, he's getting closer because we're both heading towards each other. And I was able to keep my cool and remember what not to do and managed to get myself back into the proper lane where I was supposed to be. And then I hit another slick patch and slid off the road. But I kept my cool and even had the thought of, huh, so this is how I'm going to die. As all of this was going down, that was my first thought. I was like, huh, so this is how it ends. Okay, now what not to do? Don't jerk the wheel. Check.
Don't die. Check.
Yes, don't die. Check. So I'm like, okay, gently turn the wheel in the direction I want to go. And then I gained traction and ended up in the proper lane. I will say that, like, on our comments, the listeners, Joanna would not try to record it. She wants to experience it as is.
Okay.
Without any interference from a screen. Mike doesn't feel that he'd be able to get good footage because he met George Takei in an elevator and couldn't keep his hand steady enough to take a picture because he was like, I assume he was fanboying, so.
Very nice, Mike. Very nice.
In the news,
I love the title of the story. Aliens accidentally killed me, but took my corpse onto UFO to save my life. There's a lot going on there. So a man was accidentally killed by a laser blast from a UFO before his corpse was taken aboard and he was miraculously brought to life. It has astonishingly been claimed. The events which allegedly happened to Travis Walton 41 years ago are one of the world's most infamous so-called alien abduction cases. But now it appears he may not actually have been abducted after all, but instead rescued. The twist in the story has been revealed by UFO researcher J.P. Robinson after meeting with Mr. Walton at an alien conference. The case began in November 1975 in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest near Phoenix, Arizona, when six forestry workers of Mr. Walton's reported him missing after they allegedly saw him get blasted 20 feet by an energy beam from a UFO that appeared over the trees. Officers thought it was an elaborate cover-up, and they actually had killed him and disposed of the body. But 5 days later, he turned up, saying he had been abducted by aliens and had been forced to punch his way out. He relayed what happened in his book, Fire in the Sky. Might sound familiar, because there's a movie that came out in 1993. He claims to have seen three gray aliens on the UFO and later human-looking beings described as smooth-skinned and blemishless. Now, Mr. Robinson has relayed the new details on his website. He wrote, "I was never convinced of the authenticity of this incident. Not to say I don't believe it, just that you can never be wholly sure. All that changed when I met Travis Walton and got the fantastic opportunity to speak face to face with the man who claims to have met beings from another world and try to figure out whether he is for real or just a really good liar." After having spent quality time in his presence and talking privately about his experience, I can only conclude that this man did meet these beings aboard that ship. What wasn't clear before was the question of why would they zap him with that beam of light to begin with? It's all a bit too sci-fi for me. However, he said he now realizes it was an accident which killed Mr. Walton. He said Travis was in the wrong place at the wrong time and should have never stood so close to such an incredible machine. He himself explained that he was just about to turn back to the truck seconds before being struck. Now it seems that as the craft was preparing to take off into the night, it inadvertently knocked Travis for six, killing him in the process. Knocked Travis for six. Okay. Yes, you read that right. Travis told me that he believed that he was actually dead. So now we get to the real question, which so many people ask. Why did they take him on board? Well, according to the man himself, they took him in order to save his life, and they clearly succeeded in doing so. Mr. Robinson said the story now has a more legitimate tone. He added that it was an accident and act of humanitarianism. He said, "Travis Walton has made me believe again, or should I say know again, that we are truly in the midst of something remarkable, and it is only a matter of time before the bigger picture is revealed." Now, 41 years on, Mr. Walton and his former co-workers still maintain their account of what is recognized as the world's most remarkable UFO sighting and alien abduction claim on record. The team, who were on a tree-thinning project, have all passed lie detector tests over the remarkable incident in November 1975, adding credibility to their account. The seven of them reported how they were driving in the forest in a truck when they first saw the mysterious lights, which then appeared to be a flying saucer up in the canopy. A mesmerized Mr. Walton was the only one among them to venture out of the vehicle and approach the craft, despite his colleagues pleading with him not to go near. Mr. Walton said, "My eyes were just riveted on this thing. Then it threw me back through the air 20 feet." His colleagues reported seeing him fly backwards with his back arched from a beam of light bearing down from the craft. The terrified men fled in the vehicle, but returned later when there was no trace of the UFO or Mr. Walton. Mr. Walton insists he woke up inside the alien craft, lying on a table and surrounded by three alien beings with other humanoid-looking beings in the background. He said, "I got this rush of adrenaline and jumped from the table and just lashed out. Then I blacked out and woke up on the side of the road and ran to the nearest call box and collapsed." What he didn't know at the time was that he had been gone for 5 days. There are still skeptics, however, and those who claim it was an elaborate hoax. The OccupyTheory.org website, part of the Occupy movement, is not convinced by the story and points out that there were no witnesses to Mr. Walton being drawn up into the craft, adding that he would have hid for 5 days before reappearing. In a report about the case, the website said, once Walton returned, he wouldn't just talk to the press. He'd only talk with the publications that believed in UFOs. The story ran in the National Enquirer in 1975. It also claimed he failed a lie detector carried out by the Enquirer, and there was a history of UFO/alien claims among his immediate family before the abduction. And that comes from the express.co.uk.
I just keep on thinking the aliens inside the craft, they're like, oh, crap. I think we just killed a human.
We were only supposed to collect samples, guys, not kill the humans.
And they bring them on board. We're like, sorry, dude, our bad. Totally. We'll
don't
totally
tell mom,
make.
Don't tell mom. Don't tell mom.
This is an interesting theory. I've never heard this. It's a new twist, a new wrinkle in the tale.
Indeed.
Do you guys believe him? Do you guys believe that he was taken by aliens? Of what you have read or what you have watched in the movie, do you believe it?
Well, kind of. I'm inclined to believe at least part of it, like where something did happen, because you have other witnesses there, other coworkers of his that were there that witnessed this bright flash. But then they took off. It sounds like they didn't hang around and be like, oh, where's Walton? Don't know. Don't care. In the options of fight or flight, they chose flight.
Yeah.
So
that goes back to our question. Would you stay calm during a situation like that? Calm enough to help your friend or calm enough to take a picture?
I would. I believe. I would like to think that I would, but, you know, a bright flash of light, you never know.
Yeah, it's 1977, though,
I
right?
I do believe what they're saying. Yeah, it's 1975.
Five.
But his friends are, you know, they're telling the truth about what they saw. And so I at least believe the story up to that extent, because that's how much of the story that they experienced. So, yeah, I don't know if maybe it knocked him out and he had these really crazy dreams. You know how you incorporate, like, environmental noises and whatnot into your dreams? Like, I wonder if he was having, like, one of those dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he was just injured out there for, you know, 3 days, or how many days was it? 5 days?
5 days.
5 days. And, you know, he made up the story to make it better than the actual story, that he just was left behind, you know? Who knows?
Right.
Who knows? We weren't there.
That's very true.
Thank you very much, Anessa. That was an awesome story. Something new to think about.
Yep.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Okay, since the last time we spoke, what has been going on in your world, Anessa and Brad?
Well, I get a snow day tomorrow.
Yay!
So, woohoo, no work. Brad gets to take the kitties into the vet for their shots.
Yes.
And I'm going to hang out at home with Alex because Alex is not a fan of dogs. And, you know, there's usually dogs at the vet.
Yep. And then tomorrow I leave for Man's Woodworking Weekend. Dun, dun, dun.
Where is Man's? Event. Where is it?
We descend upon a friend. You remember Rob Benton?
Yes.
He's a good friend of mine and a former guest on Adventure Party. His parents snowbird in Texas and in Mexico. And his dad has quite the collection of woodworking tools, bandsaw. He's got a huge lathe, which is absolutely amazing. And once a year, usually sometime in February, we head down to Broadhead, Wisconsin, and we do a bit of woodworking over the weekend.
Like, what was the project last year that you worked on? What did you make?
Was that the year that I made stone egg holder? I can't remember. That was the year before.
Before. Because the year before that was the rolling pin.
Yeah.
And then...
I'm going to say tie holder.
Sure.
No.
I was like, sure.
I think last year maybe I didn't have a project.
Oh, that's right. Because you were going to make the handles, the tap handles.
Yeah, I was going to make the tap handle.
That didn't go as planned.
Yeah. So I was using it. I was lathing a piece of wood and I had a pretty good shape going for a beer tap handle. And the hunk of wood just kind of... And it broke. I wasn't hurt and it didn't come off the lathe, but it just totally, it disintegrated in one part of the tap handle. So it was unusable. So that was that.
So better luck this year, my friend.
Yep. This year I am working on a cigar box guitar, an electric cigar box guitar
Sweet.
For that matter.
Awesome.
Yep.
I can't wait to see the finished product.
Me too.
Do you play guitar?
I do not. Well, I took lessons eons ago, and now I've kind of... This is something I really... It's on my bucket list of things to build, and once I have it built, then I need to learn how to use it. So adding to my collection of things that I wish to do before I am no longer on this planet.
All right.
Fill in the bucket list is what I'm doing, my friend.
Do you have a deadline? Are you on is there?
No, I'm not on a deadline. And just, you know, okay. No time like the present. You don't know how long you have on this planet. So do it now while you can.
Well, this week I ended 12 days in a row of working. So it was nice to get a little time off, although I've had to go into work the last 2 days.
What?
Just for meetings and things like that. Our regular staff meeting was yesterday. Then I met with our program director for our monthly air check. And then today we had a meeting about our big ratings promotion. Our ratings period starts next week. I believe it's... earlier than the States. I don't think in the States, spring book doesn't start until March, right? I think.
I'm a little sketchy on that now. Yeah. I don't get to be as close to it anymore as I used to.
I've wanted to somehow incorporate zombies into this podcast since the very beginning when we started. And my dream is coming true on this episode. Was there a UFO in the Walking Dead episode on Sunday? Possibly. Did you guys watch it? Are you guys still watching The Walking Dead?
I'm on whatever last season was, season 6.
Okay. Well, hopefully
we are behind.
Okay. Hopefully, I don't think this will spoil too much. So, did you read what I have here?
No.
Okay.
I saw The Walking Dead and then I stopped.
All right. I'll try to sort of censor it a little bit. So
I can take my headphones off and then Brad can give me the thumbs up.
No, it's okay. It's okay. So it was a sort of a weird episode. There was some strange stuff happening in the latest episode of The Walking Dead. And one of the shots, a person caught what they believe could be a UFO in the background of a certain scene. And what's weird, what's weird is pretty sure the scene would be CG, but it doesn't look like it. So first instinct is maybe a plane accidentally got caught in the background shot. Remember that this scene was made using green screen, so it seems a little strange to miss this detail, though it does seem like the most likely scenario. This is the article that's saying all this. However, there is one other explanation besides birds and editing errors. So what happened was a few objects flew in the sky in the background. While the things at the tree line are quite obviously birds, there's one object above them that's traveling at a much faster speed than most of the birds there.
Huh.
However, there's one other explanation besides birds and editing errors. UFOs. It might sound a little far-fetched, but now this is where it gets interesting. Considering the fact that we're watching a show taking place in a world where zombies exist, aliens at least have to be suggested. Not to mention that when The Walking Dead creator Robert Kirkman originally pitched the comics, he mentioned there would be alien involvement. Kirkman told The Hollywood Reporter back in 2013, when I pitched The Walking Dead originally, it was turned down simply because there had not been a successful zombie book in the history of comics. I wasn't willing to accept no for an answer, and so I said, he said, I forgot to tell you that this is actually a big setup for an alien invasion. Apparently, Kirkman pitched that in the comics, the zombies had been created by an alien race as a way for human beings to be wiped out before the aliens took over Earth. However, after three issues of the comic had been released, Kirkman then revealed there would be no aliens, admitting he'd tricked his publisher into accepting his zombie comic. Though, interestingly, there was a short spin-off Walking Dead comic released last year called The Walking Dead: The Alien, which told the story of Rick's brother, Jeff Grimes. So I'm thinking that maybe this was like an Easter egg. Like Kirkman was involved in this little gag in some way. And they're like, remember that whole thing about the aliens? You should put that in there just to see if somebody notices it. And
crazy.
You can see the video in the link that I will put in the show notes. And you guys can see for yourself. And Anessa and Brad, I encourage you to watch this. You will not be spoiled by anything if you watch this video. It's just a loop of the scene over and over again. It's just Rick, and you see in the background what looks like birds, and then possibly a UFO.
All right.
Do you guys want to take a look at that now? I would love your opinion. Do you want to click on the link real quick?
I am clicking it now.
I wish there was a way I could throw a link in our video, but there's not, unfortunately. Oh, you guys, did you hear about the week before last Walking Dead episode? There was a major zombie kill. Like, they set the record for most number of walkers killed in one shot.
Nice. Yeah, it almost looks like a... Wait.
Hang on. I'm thinking airplane.
Boy, it's hard to say. maybe it looks like it flutters for a second. I'm thinking it's a bird.
Okay, maybe a bird that got closer than other birds.
Well, it's going in and out of the clouds, though.
Is it?
Because if you notice, it fades.
So if you guys are interested, the ones that are watching or listening to this podcast, definitely check it out in the show notes and let us know what you think. Do you think it's a UFO or just the bird thing?
Airplanes.
I don't think that they have airplanes in The Walking Dead.
No, they don't.
They do in Georgia.
And it's green screen too, right? So why would they make that big of a mistake?
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Is Kirkman still a part of the show or did he?
Yeah, he's definitely part of the show.
Oh, maybe that's his way of just nodding to his initial pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
Since I do the show called The Adventure Party and we talk about games and gaming, this almost seems to be too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Okay, for those that aren't familiar with Adventure Party, can you just do a brief synopsis of what that's all about and then jump into the news story?
Myself and my co-host Glenn Bittner, who is he's a manager of a game shop in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he plays a lot of different games. So this podcast includes Glenn's game reviews for games that he has run and plays. He has an immense game library. And we just talk about board games, card games, role-playing games, all sorts of different kinds of games.
So, don't forget reindeer games.
There can be reindeer games at times, usually in the winter. We're kind of coming out of that season, so far less reindeer games now. But this combines aliens and board games.
Ooh.
But this combines a very famous alien-based movie. And here the title of this particular article is Zip Up Your Mittens for Mondo's New Board Game of John Carpenter's The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing, adapted from John W. Campbell's immortal 1938 novella, Who Goes There?, is celebrating its 35th anniversary this year. Oh, God, I feel old. I saw a picture of Andrew Ridgely from Wham!, and he looks like somebody's grandfather, so I felt really old today.
Well, A New Hope is 40 this year.
Yeah, I know. Ugh. Anyways, enough of that pity fest. Now there's an elaborate board game from Mondo and the USopoly subsidiary Project Raygun. With Infection at Outpost 31, which is the name of the game, players bundle up in polar fleece while trying to discover who among them is infected with a shape-shifting alien virus. Toasty jackets aren't mandatory, but it certainly could add to the overall atmosphere while you listen to the eerie The Thing score and take your turn gathering clues and attempting to ferret out the infected. Here's how Mondo's Jay Shaw explained the creative process. When we set out to create the first licensed Mondo board game, the biggest question was what film property would we go after? So many of the films we celebrate at Mondo would be an absolute blast in game form. As soon as John Carpenter's a suspense masterpiece, The Thing, was mentioned, it was very quickly became our top choice. The next step was to figure out how to actually make a game. We all love playing them, but none of us had designed one before. Game mechanics are an incredibly complicated art form, and we didn't want to enter this space unless we were going to get it right. Luckily, our dear friends at Project Raygun were completely up to the challenge. They've built an incredibly challenging, fast-paced game of paranoia that transports players directly into the film. And this story comes to us from Blaster.com.
Do you think that you and Glenn would want to play this game and do a review for Adventure Party?
I would definitely do that. It's one of my favorite sci-fi horror films. Right up to, I'd say, The Thing and Alien are in my top two spots.
Well, they're very similar because you don't really know the alien's there until the very end. Like, you don't really see the alien until pretty much the end. They both take place in the 70s, and they both have crazy music.
They do. And, you know, the main difference between The Thing and Alien is that we get glimpses of the creature from time to time, but it's fluid in its shape, and it's so crazy. And the practical effects that they had in it today are still spoken of in whispered awe with today's practical effects. It still holds up.
That's what makes the movie so scary, is you don't know what the alien's going to be. It could be anything or anybody.
Yeah. And the ending for The Thing is just, it's maddening because you want to know, and you're in the cusp of knowing, and then it fades to black. It's great, and it would be cool to play a game that can actually kind of harness that same sense of dread, fear, and paranoia. I would totally be on board for it.
When does this come out? Is it out already?
It's not out already. They don't have a date for it, and they don't have cover art for it yet. So the only thing that they could do is really make the announcement that they've started the process and that it will happen. But that's all the information that we have right now.
Well, when it comes out, you should definitely get it. Definitely play it for both Adventure Party and as a pick for Alien Invasion. That would be super cool.
Yeah, what's nice is Glenn, a lot of game companies are kind of getting preview copies out to game, like brick-and-mortar game stores. So Glenn has managed to get preview copies for a number of different games. So I'm kind of hoping that Mondo and Project Raygun will do that and offer this as kind of a pre-release so he can take a look at it.
What does he get it, and then maybe he sends you a copy? Is that how that works?
No, what he does is he'll get a copy and he'll play it in Milwaukee and tell me about it. But if he actually gets a hold of this game, we'll be making a road trip to Milwaukee so we can play it.
That'd be fun.
Before we do a show. So, yeah, I would totally make a trip to Milwaukee to play this.
All right. Something to look forward to.
Yes, absolutely.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge. Just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
This is a dome. I can see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
A couple enjoying an evening stroll along Portreath Beach were left mesmerized and had to flee.
Run away.
After spotting, they had to flee after seeing a UFO. So that's what they would do, fight or flight. They're flying away. It is a second reported UFO sighting in just a few weeks, as two women claim to have been left shocked and in awe of a huge UFO they saw in Penzance. Speaking to UK UFOs about the sighting in Portreath, a woman who gave only her last name, Miss Cousins, said that she was walking along the beach with her partner when events started to take an eerie turn. Miss Cousins said that she and her partner were watching the ocean, but soon noticed that they could not hear it. She said that as she was walking along the beach with her partner, as it was peaceful, she continued, "We sat down on the bench by the cafe. As soon as we looked at the ocean, we noticed everything went silent. It was an eerie feeling. We feel like we were in a different time zone." The couple reportedly looked up and realized that hovering over their heads was a huge UFO. Miss Cousins said, "We looked up and we saw this black-shaped boomerang object that looked so big that we sat frozen just staring at this thing. We were both so mesmerized by this. All of a sudden, we heard a humming sound, and we looked at each other, and then all of a sudden, it disappeared." According to UK UFOs, the sighting took place at Portreath Beach on Monday, February 20th. The sighting adds to a theory that Cornwall could be a UFO triangle of paranormal activity. Know where I'm going on my next trip to the UK. After seeing the strange UFO, the startled couple left the beach, heading home to lock their doors and contemplate what it was that they saw in the skies above Portreath. "And me and my partner ran from the beach, ran home, and locked our doors," added Miss Cousins. "Whatever it was so big it covered the stars." According to David Gillam, founder of Cornwall UFO Research Group, no sightings were reported to them. However, he is currently trying to get more information on a sighting in Penzance that left two women haunted and in awe of a strange phenomenon spotted in the skies. David said, "We haven't had anything reported to us as yet in the Portreath area. The last sighting we had in Cornwall was in Penzance, but it was a few weeks ago now." David is now appealing to members of the public who may be able to give him more information on the reported sighting over Penzance that left two women fearing there would be a plane crash. And this comes from cornwalllive.com.
I'm trying to think of a funny joke to incorporate Penzance. I mean, the obvious is pirates. Pirates of Penzance?
Arr.
No, nothing. Okay.
Yeah. Not totally up on the Gilbert and Sullivan collection.
Oh, come on, Brad. Get with the program.
Sorry.
So I think what they got there is a triangle, a black triangle UFO. That's what it sounds like to me. What do you guys think?
Yep. I think so.
I could see that.
And those things are known to be very silent, and very quiet. They,
and
this
deadly.
Is not, what? And deadly?
Sorry.
No, this is, I've heard other reports about how they just kind of appear out of nowhere and people, like, they're looking up and they're like, "Where'd the stars go?" "Oh, there's a big black gigantic triangle floating above me, making no noise whatsoever." So that sounds like what this is.
Bum bum bum. It does. That's what it sounds like. So I don't know how into UFOs this particular couple is, but if they're not and this is what they saw, it seems legit.
I like the part where you talk about how something about, hang on one second, let me find the line. Oh, "We noticed everything went silent. It was eerie. It was an eerie feeling. We felt like we were in a different time zone." That's kind of a cool way of putting it. Like it kind of blocked out everything, not just the stars, but sound and everything else.
Yeah, it's kind of wild that it would silence everything, especially the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty loud and noisy, well, even on its quiet days, hear it.
Well, maybe they got within, like, the UFO's, like, tractor beam or whatever, or, like, force field. You know, maybe these crafts have some kind of force field protecting it. Or, you know, we've talked about how maybe a lot of UFOs are not just, they don't not just travel through space, but travel through time and dimensions. Maybe they're within like their own warp bubble or something like that.
Maybe.
That could be.
Maybe that whole missing time thing, maybe that's part of that.
Maybe they were abducted and don't realize it.
Oh, yes. They better go get hypnotized soon. This happened on my birthday, by the way, Monday.
What?
Yeah.
Nice.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much. You guys, I have two of my gifts in the video shot for those of you watching us on YouTube or Facebook. I'm wearing my brand new headphones, which were a gift from my lovely wife, Stephanie. They're Sennheisers, very top-of-the-line Sennheisers. And then I got an on-air light signed behind me. I've always wanted one of those. So.
Sweet.
Got it all now. I don't need anything else. I can die. So what do you think, Brad? What do you think of this sighting?
Well, I don't know what to make of it. We've got a... You know, sometimes I wonder if you have an experience with another person that's very... I don't want to say necessarily traumatic. Well, this was, you know, there was a lot going on here. But, you know, where something is really, where something really strange is happening, if the two of you don't maybe heighten the experience just with your reactions to what's going on. And do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that I know maybe exactly what you're saying.
You make it more into something than what it actually was.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that they're lying or anything. I'm just saying that you can really heighten the experience of something that happens.
Like two people come back to the house. Okay, you're sitting there watching TV or whatever, and two people come back to the house, and they're all excited about this experience they had. It could be anything, but yep. It's more exciting because it happened to both of them and nobody else. Like, it to you, it'd be like, whatever. But to them, it's like, oh, my God, this is the most awesome thing ever that just happened.
Yeah, you know, eyewitness accounts aren't always as reliable as stuff that is actually recorded and documented through other means. So it's hard to say. I want to believe. But God, it would have been great if somebody could have gotten some video or pictures on this as
going
well.
Going back to our question of the week.
Or maybe they didn't have their phones with them.
Well, and that could be it too.
Yeah.
Or maybe they weren't working.
Battery's dead.
Some kind of
because of the zone that they're in. Yeah, the zone that they're in. They're the space-time continuum warp bubble dimensional thing. Whatever. We're the Else Nerds.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockde, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making...
Picks and warnings time. These are things that we enjoyed or not related to UFOs and extraterrestrials. And it looks like Brad is first on the docket.
I am. I watched a movie on the Netflix. Broke it up between a couple of lunch breaks. And that movie... I remember seeing it when it came out in the theater and thinking I really wanted to like it. And it was interesting. That movie was Lost in Space from 1998. And in it we had Heather Graham. We had, I think, Lacey Chabert was in it. Mimi Rogers, the former Mrs. Cruz. I think she was the first. Let's see. We got
Joey.
Yep. Gary Oldman, Matt LeBlanc.
Whoa.
I know. Right. And let's see. Yeah, those are the big ones. Well, June Lockhart and the guy that played the original Don West. He was in it. And Jared Harris, the guy who plays a lot of creepy dudes. he was in it, and he played, well, I won't give it away if you haven't seen it.
It's a good time to get caught up on this, though, because Netflix is coming out with their Lost in Space series.
Yeah. Very true. So the core premise of this is that Dr. Robinson, played by, I just said his name, William Hurt, is working on a project called the Jupiter Project, and they are going to send he and his family out into space. And in 10 years' time, they're supposed to reach a planet called Beta Prime. And they are going to build a hyperspace gate that would, they're finishing up one on Earth. And by the time they get to Beta Prime, and they can construct theirs, they would have a gate, an anchored gate, in which you could just travel from Earth to Beta Prime, boom, you're there. They've established that in this world, the rules for hyperspace travel is you need a gateway. Otherwise, you will end up somewhere random if you just fire up the hyperdrive. So you need to have it controlled through these gates. Now, unbeknownst to the rest of the human population, the Earth has 20 years left to really be able to support human life well. So the hope is they get to Beta Prime, link this up, and everybody can evacuate the Earth. As you know, the ozone layer is down 40%, and it's continuing to drop. They're having climate issues, resources are being tapped out, and things are kind of going to hell in a handbasket. Now, there are a group of people who wish to profit from this, as often there are. And one of the people who are a part of this is Gary Oldman's character, Dr. Smith. And wackiness ensues. Dr. Smith is betrayed, and he is knocked unconscious and left on the Jupiter craft. And so he is stuck with the Robinsons and Major West, the pilot. And they have wacky adventures. Now, the interesting thing about this is it's established early on that Will Robinson has been working with time travel. He's got an experiment, and of course he took first place in the science fair, as he does every year, but he's actually kind of got some fundamentals of time travel, but nobody believes that he has done this. As they travel out into space, I'm not going to give away some of the stuff that happens, but as they travel in space, they find this kind of window, kind of a weird anomaly, and they pass through it. And this is one of the plot holes that I found in the film. The thing that they travel through is a time gateway in which they move about 20 years into the future. And this is one of the core events that really kind of guides what happens throughout the rest of the film. So I don't want to give that part away. But the thing that made me kind of stop and go, what? If they move forward in time 20 years, okay, they run into another ship from Earth. They haven't built the gateway. So everybody on Earth should be in really horrible shape. we don't know if they've like they can't manufacture tons of these ships because their resources are being depleted on the Earth. So it's just like a big plot hole that I didn't really enjoy watching it recently the second time. So anyway, they did a fine job of paying homage to early, like the TV show of Lost in Space. Like I said, June Lockhart shows up, and the original actor who played Don West, Major Don West, the pilot of the Jupiter 2. The ship that they travel in, the first ship that you see is the Jupiter craft, and it looks like the flying saucer that they flew in the 50s program. But it's actually in the movie, it's like the first stage. It's the Jupiter 1. And when they get to a certain point in escaping the Earth's gravity, they blow out this outer shell and you get to see the Jupiter 2, which is a very streamlined and sort of an ergonomic looking ship as opposed to the classic UFO ship that they had, like I said, used in the 50s program. So one other thing that I kind of noticed is, as I recall, I remember being totally wowed by what they did when the effect that they did when they first jump into hyperspace. Like all of time seems to stop and stuff is sort of falling, but everything is frozen in time on the ship. And now I look at, you know, when you got to like 1999, when they did the same thing in The Matrix, the effects that they used there were light years ahead of this. And it's only 1 year difference between the two films in their release, at least. So it was interesting to see that Matrix had done it better, even though that there was that short period of time between the two of them. So other than that, it's an okay film. It's interesting. It's a good popcorn movie if you want to watch it. I would give it 2.5, maybe 3 saucers, flying saucers. Yeah, I give it 2.5 or 3.
All right. I enjoyed it when it came out. I don't think I've seen it. Maybe I've seen it once since then, but it's been a while. So maybe if I went back to watch it, I'd think it is a lot worse than it was when I first saw it, possibly. I don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah. Looking forward to the new series. That looks pretty good.
It should be interesting.
Some awesome stuff coming on Netflix. We got that. You got Mystery Science Theater 3000 in April.
Yes, in April.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. April 14th.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. All right.
It's exciting.
I watched something today that was very unexpected. I didn't know this was coming, and I saw it online, and I saw it a couple of times before I realized what it was. It's the prologue to Alien Covenant. For some reason, I have Aliens Covenant. That's incorrect. It's Alien Covenant. It's called Last Supper. It's the official prologue to Alien Covenant, which introduces the crew of the mission as they gather for their final meal before entering cryosleep. Set aboard the Covenant, a colonize. I'm getting feedback from something.
That's me. I'm getting antsy. I'm tired of sitting. Okay. Sorry.
Set aboard the Covenant, a colonization ship on its way to a remote planet to form a new human settlement. The main crew, all couples, and their android, Walter, or Izzy, enjoy the final meal together before cryosleep. Okay, here's a spoiler. Walter's actually David.
What?
What's his face? The actor. Help me out. Michael Fassbender's character. Also, I didn't know he was in it, but what's his name? Oh, shoot. It's been a lot of stuff. He was in Gattaca. What's his name?
Ethan Hawke?
Ethan Hawke is the captain of the ship.
There you go. Bam.
Is it Ethan Hawke? Hang on 1 second. I need to check this before I don't want to lie to the people. I have pride in the show that we give out correct information all the time. We never get it wrong. So I'm going to look this up.
Let's see. It's got Michael Fassbender, Catherine Waterston, Billy Crudup, Danny McBride.
James Franco.
Yeah,
that's the one I was thinking. Did I say James Franco? No, Ethan Hawke.
No, Ethan Hawke, yeah.
I don't know why I get those two mixed up. It's weird. Okay. Yeah, it's good. It's there's a scene where one of the characters is choking, and you think it's going to happen. You think the alien's going to burst out of their chest or whatever. But it's then David, or whatever his name is, Walter, comes up and hits her in the back of the on the back. And she coughs up whatever it is, and he goes, "I got your back." So this is on YouTube. Getting ready for the release of Alien Covenant, which comes out on May 19th, 2017. So I highly recommend it. It's cool to see... hang on one second. I have to see his name. I can't think of his name. Danny McBride. It's weird to see Danny McBride in a serious movie like this, because you're used to seeing him in comedies, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So looks like a pretty decent cast. Looking forward to it. Again, that's Alien Covenant, the official prologue. It's called Last Supper, and you can find it in the show notes or just do a Google search. You will find it to watch for free somewhere out there. All right. Flying Saucers, 3.5 out of 5.
No, okay.
That's not enough. I think if it was longer, I would have given it a better rating, but it was so short that I didn't really get a good enough feel for the way the movie's going to be. It's very much got the original Alien vibe to it, just from this prologue. Now, that may not be the rest of the movie, but with just this short video, it's got that Alien vibe to it. So it's got that going for it.
Yeah, just looking at what little that I saw, the ambient noise and everything, it just has that same that same feel to it. So
yeah, and it's human beings going out to colonize for the first time. So this is way before the events in the other Alien. Well, I think it's like 20 years before the events of Alien. So still early on. All right, Anessa, what do you have as your pick and or warning? Her microphone's off.
Yep. I was just trying to keep noise down.
Yeah, I'm, like I said, kind of tired of sitting. So I have a wonderfully terrible movie called Supersonic Man. But I watched this with riff tracks, which makes it way more tolerable. And I was telling Brad a little bit about it, but essentially you've got a superhero named Kronos who comes from a distant galaxy, and he ends up going up against a mad scientist over the fate of mankind. So, yeah, it's bad without any commentary. So if you watch it, I highly recommend either watch it with a group of friends or watch it with the riff tracks, but don't watch it by yourself. The movie starts out and you have Kronos flying to Earth, and the superhero, he has a cape, he's wearing a red suit. He has what kind of reminds me of the Flash symbol on his chest, but around it, it's got like a different color border. The lightning, of course, is different. The lightning bolt. He has a blue mask and a blue cape, and they're both very sparkly. And as he's flying, he flies in the usual superhero that you imagine flying through the air with the arms out in front. And then I don't know if he gets tired or if he gets bored, but his arms will kind of go out to his sides like he's pretending to be an airplane for a while. and it'll go back in front, and then he'll bring like his arm, one of his arms in and tuck, like kind of like tuck it in. And yeah, and it's, they really could have cut out a lot of dead space in this movie to make it flow a little better. And so there is this evil scientist. He ends up kidnapping another scientist, and he wants him to work with him to build something that would help him take over mankind or get rid of mankind. I forget which. And so the guy gets kidnapped. The guy, the scientist's daughter, is trying to figure out what has happened to her dad. And there is this, I put in quotes, high speed chase, which there's nothing speedy about this chase. And she's trying to get away in this little Volkswagen Beetle from these two guys. One of them happens to have a gun, which comes out like after 5 minutes of them driving around. And she turns onto a dirt road, and there is a steamroller, which I swear is just like one big wooden prop that Kronos picks up. She drives underneath it. He puts it back down. The bad guys behind her like swerve to miss the steamroller and go over the side of a quote cliff, which ends up being more of a gentle slope. And halfway down the slope, the car explodes. This is the kind of quality movie that you would be getting if you watched it. It's ridiculous. If you love cheesy movies, I do highly recommend it with riff tracks. I forget where I saw it. Oh, I saw it on Amazon through Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's available on Netflix though. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Cheesy superhero movie. Oh, spoiler alert. The guy has to say a little chant to switch over to superhero mode. And it looks like he's wearing like a plastic banded watch, like maybe a Timex or something. It was made in 1979. So imagine the effects.
I have.
Have you seen it?
No, I've imagined the effects.
Oh, okay. You've imagined the effects.
Yes.
So yeah, with riff tracks, I would give it, I'd give it 3 flying saucers out of 5.
But without?
Man.
-1?
I'd be nice and give it a 1 just out of the occasional cheesiness factor that I enjoy so much.
All right. Wasn't, Brad, wasn't Kronos a DC? Well, Kronos is a DC character, right? But it's not the same character.
Not the same person, no.
Okay.
And the name Kronos ends up in mythology as well, so it's not just comic books. Mm. It's been around for hundreds of years.
Gotcha.
What she said.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. In review, our picks and warnings this week were the following. Riff Tracks, Supersonic Man. We had Alien Covenant Prologue, Last Supper video, and Lost in Space from 1998. On Netflix. And you can find the links to our picks and warnings in the show notes, and you can check them out for yourselves.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going to gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to read more about the stories that we covered on this episode, click the links in the show notes. We'd like to thank Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. You can find his stuff at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. Also, Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. Learn more about him and his stuff at thecaravel.net, thecaravel.net. And finally, to Ben Olson for recording the disclaimer that we play at the very beginning of the episode. All right, final thoughts, Brad, go.
I still have to watch the Prometheus, the Alien Covenant in its entirety. So I feel bad that I haven't watched it in its entirety yet.
Oh, the video.
So, yeah, the video.
Okay. Well, get on it. It's only 5 minutes or no, 7 minutes, maybe seven.
Yeah, it doesn't take too long. I just have to stop being lazy and actually watch it.
Don't feel bad. You don't have to do anything in the world, Brad. Don't feel pressured to do anything. If the cool kids are doing it, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do it as well.
It kind of does.
Well, okay. All right. Before we get to Anessa's final thought, I want your reaction, Nightwing movie.
I, as a huge comic book nerd, would be very interested in watching that. I'm not sure how much of a commercial success it will be. It'll be interesting to see how they work that. So,
well, it's going to be directed by the guy that did Lego Batman, and that looks pretty good. So, I'm hopeful.
I am as well. Nightwing's an interesting character, and he's not like Batman light. There's a whole different sort of thing going on there. So,
and that must mean the Robin that was in Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, that must have been who's the guy, the one that died by Joker's hands? Jason Todd?
Jason Todd, yeah.
Okay. We'll see. All right. Anessa, what's your final thought?
I don't remember.
Fair enough.
Had it all lined up, and then it was gone. Oh, right. So you know that saying where, like, if your friends jumped off of a bridge, like, would you do it? Kind of a, if everyone else is doing this, would you do it? Type of thing.
Yes.
I actually met someone the other day that jumped off of a bridge because their friends did it.
Oh. Was it a high bridge?
I don't know. I don't know how tall the bridge was, but they were talking about summer activities or something that they had done, and people will randomly tell me different things about their lives, and I only ever see them once or twice, and that was one of the things that I was told. Was that they were
fun fact.
Their friends that jumped off of a bridge and they followed. I'm like, well, that answers that question.
Yeah, you're the guy. You're the person.
You're the guy who the saying is based off of.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Anessa. Thanks, Brad. And thank you for listening/watching. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay,
bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.